This talk will be held by Marlene. She has a lot of fun working with hardware, experimenting with creating files for laser cutting, and she will take you into the world of how to create correct files, how to avoid mistakes, and you will learn a lot if you want to prepare things with laser cutting by yourself. And now the talk with Marlene begins.
Hello everyone, my name is Marlene and we're going to talk today about laser cutting and how to prepare files for a laser cutting job. Now this talk is mostly intended for beginners, so if you've never done any laser cutting before, maybe you've seen a laser cutter in action but you've never really done it yourself, then this is basically the talk for you. If you already know your way around laser cutters, you're probably going to be a little bit bored by this. Anyway, but in order to know how to prepare files for laser cutting, first of all, we need to understand what it is that we're doing, how the laser operates, and what kind of jobs it can do, and we also need to understand a little bit about the materials that we are using. Now, of course, this is not a complete guide to laser cutting, and it does not replace a personal training or introduction on how to use your specific laser cutter at your local hackspace, so always make sure that you have someone to show you how to operate your machine that you are intending to use for your laser cutting job. Okay, so first of all, some basics on the optics. How does a laser cutter actually work, or how does a laser work? Well, we're not going to look at how the laser works, but what it does is it produces light, shown by the red arrows on the screen. So basically these come out fairly collimated. Like if it's a good laser, it should be fairly collimated. Collimated means these lines come out in parallel, so the light doesn't actually spread out. It doesn't diverge much. And this light is basically positioned inside of the laser cutter on a horizontal plane. So the first thing that we need to do is deflect it downwards onto the material that we are actually going to work on. So that's this 45 degree angle mirror up here. And then what we also want to do is send it through a lens that will basically bundle up the individual beams of light together to kind of focus it onto the so-called focal point, because we're basically bundling the energy together. So this is where the energy will be the strongest, because we have a lot of light, a lot of energy being put into a single point on to the surface of the material that we are working on. So that's what we want to do. Now, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that somebody had been using the laser cutter before you and they were working with 4 millimeter thick material. Now you come along with your material and this is only 3 millimeters wide, and what you can immediately see is that the focal point is completely off, meaning that the light that is hitting the surface is spreading out over a wider area onto the actual surface, meaning that the energy per individual spot that you might look at on your surface of the material will see less energy being induced into it, or less thermal energy in this case. So this isn't great, because we would like to have the maximum power or energy being introduced in the material. So what we can do is, I guess the most intuitive thing would be to move the lens, but that's not actually what we're going to do, because it turns out this mirror and this lens is one optical component inside the laser cutter. In fact, this is the optical component that actually moves about on the horizontal axis and in and out of this page. So what we do instead is we move the bed, the grid that the material rests on, we move this up, because this can actually be controlled. So what we want to do is basically move it up. So I left this line just for reference. This is the top of the grid that the material rests on. So if we shift this up just enough so that the surface actually coincides with the focal point, then we're exactly at the sweet spot where we want this material to be. Now, this is what it looks like in real life. I'm sorry, the image is a little bit dark. I hope you can still see the details. So here we have a neon yellow piece of material, acrylic material, or some leftovers, in fact, resting on a metallic grid, which is the bed of the laser cutter. And this is the part that can be moved up and down. Now, this black metal bar at the top that you can see, this is basically the rail where the optical component, so this part, the mirror and the lens, will be moving left and right on this rail. Now, this rail itself can actually move forwards and backwards. So with forwards and backwards and left and right motion, we basically cover this whole 2D area of the laser cutting workspace. Now, as you can see here, this tiny little metallic thing, if we zoom in, this is what it looks like. You can flip this down. All it is kind of a measurement tool that kind of helps you measure the correct distance. And what you want to do is you want to move this material up just enough such that the tip of this little measurement tool just barely touches the surface of your material. This basically means that now your piece of material that you're working with, in this case acrylic, is in the exact sweet spot in the focal point where you would like the material to be in order to get a very clean result. So what can we actually do with a laser cutter? There are basically two tasks that are relevant. One is engraving and the other one is cutting. So you want to be able to cut an outline, or maybe even on the inside, if you're using, I don't know, something like a keychain, you might want to have a little hole inside of it as well. But usually it's a matter of cutting around the outer edge of an object. And what you want to do is introduce enough heat for the material to actually melt or burn away to actually create a tiny little bit of a gap. Now, obviously, none of these images are to scale, so these are highly exaggerated. This is not what it looks like in real life. But yes, it is a subtractive process, abtragendes Verfahren in German, meaning that you are taking away a little bit of material here. Now, in real life, this laser beam is obviously, I don't know, super small. It's like as wide as, I don't know, a hair or something, you know. So this gap is not this wide. It is barely visible with the eye. Sometimes these edges are actually so close together that you need a little bit of pressure with your fingers to actually push the inner object out of its surroundings, especially depending on the settings of the laser. If you didn't fully cut through and maybe there's just a tiny little piece of material left at the very back. Now, this really heavily depends on the settings of your laser cutter. This is nothing you should really be worrying about as a beginner. So let me just say that if you have trouble with that, always check in with whoever owns or is in charge of the laser cutter and can help you out with tweaking the settings a little bit. The settings that you can play around with is the power of the laser. So this can be attenuated. You don't have to work with 100% power. And the speed at which the laser, the optical, so these components move about, that speed can also be adjusted. Of course, the faster you move, the less energy will be introduced into the material per section, right? And the slower you move, the more thermal energy will be introduced. And you want to introduce just enough energy in order to be able to cut through, but you don't really want to introduce more energy than necessary because this will damage the surroundings and can even lead to the edges melting away and looking rugged or something. Like you don't want to do that. So that's very specific, but usually you don't need to worry about that because you get presets from the software that controls or talks to the laser cutter, where you basically upload your files into. These should be stored in the presets that you're using, so you shouldn't really be worrying about that. Now, the other mode of operation or task that a laser cutter can do is engraving. Now, what you want to do with engraving is just damage the surface just a tiny little bit. So yes, you're basically burning away a tiny little bit of material here, but if you only touch the surface just a bit, it's enough to be visually, visible, but it's not going to... So this, again, is extremely exaggerated. Of course, it doesn't go in this deep. But again, this also depends on the specific settings. Now, here is an example of an acrylic keychain. This is a very small piece, only a few centimeters. So this is heavily zoomed in. And what you can see here is the cutting, the outer edge. And this is actually a good example because it's not a very good clean job that has been done here. So the settings weren't perfect in this case, which kind of makes this great for demonstration purposes. So two things you can see. First of all, if you look at these little things sticking out here, I hope you can see it well enough on your screen, that's a little bit of leftover material, basically meaning that the laser hasn't fully cut through the material. So there, at the bottom here, there was just a tiny little bit of connection, which was thin enough to be able to break out or break through. But this can also cause edges to chip off. So in this case, we were lucky because it was extra material that was left over on the piece that we were actually, that was the good part, not the extra pieces around it. So this would be easier to just simply clean it up with a little bit of a cutter knife, and then you'd be good to go and hand this out to someone as a present or whatever. So this is okay. But the other thing that you can see, which is also fine because you're always going to be able to see it just a little bit, is these lines. These tiny little lines. And what that is the individual laser positions. So as this laser beam moves across this line to cut it through, what is basically happening, if we go back to this image here, this bar, this rail, is slowly moving backwards while the optical component mounted on this rail is slowly moving to the right. So basically the bar is moving this way, the optical components are moving that way, and the little like steps you can see here, that is the step size of the motors, actually. So this isn't the laser, this is the motors, that's the step size of the motors. So this is why you can see little individual lines here. Now if we take a closer look at the engraved area at the top, you can also tell, first of all, I can tell that this is not the position this piece has been processed in. In fact, this has been flipped around by 90 degrees, so it's been lying this way instead of this way. And the reason I can tell is because the laser engraves on the horizontal axis. So basically, the optical component on this rail is moving back and forth, left and right. And those are the lines that you can see up and down on this image here. So because how do you actually create an area with a single spot of light? Of course, you have to draw a line and then move over just a bit and draw another line and then move over just a bit and draw another line. Of course, this would be on the horizontal axis. And this is how you create an area. So you can think of it a little bit like an old school TV. You know, those vacuum chamber, electron beam, really heavy, clunky things with a screen at the front where the electron beam would be converted into visible light. Basically, it's a tiny little spot of light making its way across the screen in lines. And because our human eyes are slow enough, we don't actually have the enough time resolution to be able to see that it's actually just one spot of light kind of moving across the screen. So it actually looks like a complete picture. And this is kind of similar like that, except that we are damaging the surface of the material. And this way, you can actually see the individual lines here from the movement of the laser cutter. Okay, so we've seen what acrylics look like, but what other kind of materials are there? Of course, there's also wood. Now, I always recommend starting with an acrylics project because acrylics are, in my opinion, the most beginner-friendly of all of the materials, because there's not really much you can do wrong with the material itself. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong with the laser cutting and the processes or the settings, but the material itself is not very problematic. It's pretty easy to handle. Wood can be a little bit more difficult to handle, so if you have proper expensive wood that is basically being marketed as wood that can be used in a laser cutter. It will be expensive wood, but you will probably not have any issues with it. So there's mostly two things to look out for. With wood is, first of all, it needs to be perfectly plane, so the surface needs to be perfectly even and not be slightly curved and bent, which, you know, knowing wood, especially if it gets a little bit, if it draws a little bit of moisture or something, like this can easily happen. So make sure that the wood that you're working with is perfectly level, because if it isn't, if we go back to one of these images, basically if you imagine this material kind of curving up in the middle, what you get is basically this situation where you're spreading out the energy over a larger surface area, which is not what you want. You're not going to get a clean result. You might get a very rugged result for the engraving job, or you might not be able to cut through the whole material if it's a cutting job in that particular position. So yeah, that is definitely something to look out for. All of the materials that you're using have to be perfectly flat and even. The other thing to look out for with wood is that not every wood is laser cuttable, or to be more precise, not the wood itself, but the glue that has been used to keep the wooden layers together. So usually, for the most part, you will most likely be using plywood. Plywood means it's been glued together. Not all types of glues that are being used are actually laser cuttable. So if you walk into a hardware store and don't pay attention to, you know, if you go into a crafting store, buy expensive material that is meant for laser cutting, you're not going to have any issues. But if you walk into a hardware store instead and buy cheaper woods, it can easily happen that the wood is not actually processable by the laser cutter. And in fact, it's not the wood, it's the glue inside. Another thing to look out for is that the wood needs to be perfectly dry and clean. So no oils, no resin stains, and neither natural resins nor epoxy resin or any other kind of stuff on it. Like, all of the material must be absolutely clean. Okay, so these types of materials are the most common and the easiest to use. And then there's a bunch of other things, and this is, again, not a complete list. There's paper, there's cardboard. You can use fabric. It's highly recommended to use 100% cotton, because as soon as there is any other kind of material in there, you'd have to do research on that particular material, whether or not it is actually, can be used in a laser cutter, because especially synthetics can easily catch fire or melt away and basically not be processable by a laser cutter. You can stack several layers of cotton. I've done it before. We did that for our mask project in the beginning of the pandemic. We created a lot of hand-sewn or machine-sewn handcrafted masks, and we got tired of cutting out the fabric ourselves by hand, so we decided to use a laser cutter instead. So it can be done, but it's very easy to catch fire, so again, not the easiest thing to start out working with. You can also do leather, as long as you make sure that it hasn't been processed with any chemicals or oils or anything like that. If it's clean leather, you can use that as well. Cork I've used before, that is also fun to do. Basically works the same like wood, more or less. Rubber for stamps, the only thing I can say here is, yeah, it's a lot of fun to make your own custom-made stamps, but it has to be rubber that is actually processable by a laser cutter, because the regular stamp rubber that you can buy in crafting stores will be made of PVC, also known as vinyl, which you may not use in a laser cutter. Don't do it. And then there's a few more fancier materials like glass. Depending on your specific laser cutter, you might be able to do some engraving on glass. Metals are even a little bit more tricky, so you have to do some research on what your laser cutter can actually do. Also, not every laser cutter can do every depth of the material or the thickness of the material. So, you know, maybe 5 or 6 millimeters is already a lot. So if you have 7 millimeters to process, maybe your laser cutter won't be able to actually process the material, but it highly depends on the material itself. So, and the other thing to look out for is the maximum size of material that you can even fit into the laser cutter. So if you have a 40 by 40 centimeter square piece of acrylic, but the laser cutter can only handle up to 30 centimeters in one dimension, you are not going to be able to fit that piece into the laser cutter, so it won't work. So make sure that your raw material that you're using, it will actually be compatible with the specific machine that you are going to work with. Here are some examples of what acrylic can look like. So they come in all kinds of different colors. They come in opaque colors like the blue, the green, the yellow, the black to the left, but they also come in slightly transparent, like for instance this black grayish looking semi-translucent kind of acrylic. So, and the one to the right, these are actually two different pieces. One is white acrylic, the other one is transparent acrylic, but there's a white protective layer sheet stuck onto it. That's why it looks white. This is actually transparent. The top left is neon colored, so unfortunately this doesn't really show up well on camera, but this is the neon yellow that you've seen before in these images. It shows a little bit more neonish here on these images, but yeah, it's really difficult to capture by camera, and this is a neon orange type of color. Now, the one in the middle, this is actually a lot more interesting because this is a mirrored acrylic, which means that it's clear, transparent acrylic with a layer of like metallic coating on the back. So basically like a regular mirror made of glass where you have a coating on the back. If you've ever seen a damaged mirror or scratched the surface, you will notice that the property of mirroring and deflecting the light actually disappears and it turns into just regular plain old glass. And this can actually be used pretty neatly with laser cutting. And this is what it's going to look like. So the part on the left, these are keychains I made for a friend a couple of years ago. And this piece on the left, you can tell that this is the mirrored area, and the milky white area, this is the area that has been engraved by the laser cutter. So basically what you do is you process it from the back and you remove the mirror coating. Here's another fun project. This was a stamp I made from laser cuttable stamp material. This is also kind of expensive, but it was a lot of fun to fiddle around with. And yeah, speaking of which, there's a couple of things that I'd like to mention just because I've seen people do it in hackspaces, and you really shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. So first of all, even if you think you know your way around a laser cutter, don't walk away during a laser cutting job. I know it can take a long time. Sometimes if you have a bigger project or if you have a lot of area that you need to engrave, it can take 20, 30 minutes for a single job to get done. This doesn't mean that you can simply walk out and grab some lunch, because by the time you get back, the fire brigade might be greeting you at the entrance door because you created a fire. So yeah, this has happened before. If the motors, for instance, fail inside the laser cutter machine, the laser will think it is moving while it is not, and it will be introducing a lot of heat on the same spot of the material. It will eventually catch fire, then the machine will catch fire, and essentially the room will be on fire. You really don't want this kind of thing to happen. So even if you think you're safe, you might not be. So just keep that in mind. Never walk away for more than 2 or 3 minutes from a laser cutting job. Always make sure you check back regularly. Also, do not just use any material in the machine by simply trying out if it works. Like this is, like I said before, if you use wood from a hardware store, you don't really know what kind of material is inside of the plywood, what kind of glue they've been using. So it's generally not a good idea to do that. Some people do it in hackspaces. I wouldn't really recommend it, but if you want to save some money, it is doable. But either way, just make sure that any of the materials that you're using is definitely not PVC or vinyl. Like, for instance, a typical stamp rubber that you can buy in crafting stores, like the cheap ones you can basically handcraft. Those are not safe for laser cutting. Why? Because they release some gases that can actually corrode the laser, usually chlorine gas, and some of the materials can easily catch fire that are not meant to be used inside of a laser cutter, so just be aware of that. So on top of not using PVC. Leather might have been treated with unknown chemicals. Be aware of that. Fabric that isn't 100% cotton is probably not a good idea to be using. Or materials that are covered with epoxy resin. Like, for instance, I had some leftover acrylic pieces from an older job. I took the box apart and wanted to reuse the pieces. I made sure not to hit the epoxy resin that, because that was the glue that I used to glue the pieces together, and there were some stains on it. I made sure not to laser over it, but something went wrong with the reference point or something, so I did laser over a little bit of epoxy resin. I immediately stopped the job, of course, but you could immediately smell that just from the fumes coming from that stuff. Like, this is not healthy, and you really shouldn't be doing this. And like I said before, make sure that wood doesn't contain any oils or natural resins, because this can also easily catch fire. Again, this is an incomplete list. There's a lot more things that you shouldn't be doing with a laser cutter, but this is not what this talk is about. So yeah, get your introduction from your local Hackspace and make sure they teach you everything that you need to know. And if in doubt, read the manual. It's really no excuse saying that, oh, I didn't know this. Just read it up, do your research. It's not a big deal. Okay, so now to the fun part. Preparing files for laser cutting. So how do I actually create files that can be read by the machine, or to be more precise, the computer that talks to the laser cutter and sends the file over? So usually what you will have is a computer running a software, like for instance VisiCut. In this talk, I'm only ever going to mention free and open source software, so VisiCut is one of them. File extensions that this particular program can read is the Vectorgraphics SVG file. It can also understand EPS, DXF, and a specific VisiCut file. So how do you create these files? Well, there's multiple ways how to get there. One way is, if you already know, if you're an engineering type of person, or you've used CAD software before, like for instance FreeCAD or some other tool, you can easily do that to design your pieces and then simply export the drawings to a DXF format. And this will actually be readable by a laser cutter or by the software processing the files for the laser cutter. So this is not an issue. If you already know your way around CAD software, this is one way to go. Now, of course, using 3D software, or you know, CAD software that is intended for 3D design, is not necessarily the best tool for the job if we're talking about a 2D process, because laser cutting really is a 2D job. But if you have a very extensive, complicated project, like, I don't know, some kind of 3D puzzle, or I remember as a kid I used to have these wooden pieces, like laser cut pieces, that kind of were able, like a 3D puzzle, you could put it together and it would end up being a skeleton of a dinosaur or something like that. You know, it was just some toy thing. But if you want to create something that can be put together to create a 3D object, it might make sense to use a CAD software. But personally, I've never really done that. I mean, I did it once. I exported a file to DXF just to try it out and see if it works, and it works perfectly fine. There's not much you need to worry about. So if you already know how to use CAD software, then go for it. But if you are new to it, this is kind of maybe a little bit overpowered for the job, so you don't really need to do that. A much easier way to get started is actually some online helper tools, like for instance makercase.com, and I'm going to switch over to the website. So if you open up makercase.com, you will get a selection of different types of boxes that you can generate using the software. I usually go with the most simple basic box to the left, so I'm just going to click on that. And here you can see a preview of the box that we are generating here. Now, the first thing you should do is switch to some proper units, which is millimeters, because we're in Germany here, so we want to be working in millimeters and not in inches. And then we can define the size of the box. We can also define, are these the outside or the inside measurements? And another thing you need to look out for is the material thickness. So 3 millimeter is good. Most material that I work with, most acrylics and most wood materials, are either 3 or 4 millimeters. 6, 9, and 12 is way too much, but you can also enter a custom thickness and go with, I don't know, 4 millimeters or something like that. We're going to stick with 3 for now, and let's define the height to be maybe 3 centimeters. Well, let's make it 5 centimeters. So let's say I want to create a little box for my electronics project, and maybe it's a long-ish PVC. So let's make this 10 centimeters wide and maybe also 5 centimeters. Yeah, tiny little box, why not? Okay, so is the box open or closed? Of course we can make it an open box, like for instance, I don't know, maybe I want to have a decorative box in my bathroom to collect my hair pins and needles and ribbons and stuff and personalize it a little bit and maybe write my name on it or put a logo or something pretty on it. I could do that, but for the most part, if I'm designing something to put my electronics into it, I probably want this box to be closed and have a lid. Scrolling down, we can also see the option here called edge joints. We want to set this to fingers. And these are pretty big fingers, so I actually want these to be a little bit smaller. So let's just, maybe like this looks good. The reason being, I'm zooming in with my mouse wheel, and I'm dragging around just with my mouse to change the view here. So what we want to do is we want to have these little fingers sticking out, because this makes it a lot easier to glue the pieces together. In some cases, you might not even need glue, like especially for wood, sometimes the pieces just simply stick together. They also fall apart very easily, so it always makes sense to use some glue to keep it together. If you're using acrylic, you need to keep in mind that you need to use special glue that is actually capable of gluing flat acrylic surfaces together. So that might be special epoxy resin that and there's different types of epoxy resin, so you need to make sure that the type you're using can actually be used for plastics as well. But in case of wood, you can simply use like quick dry glue or a hot glue gun, something like that. Now, if you don't have that, if you have the flat surfaces, like this is not a very stable construction, so you always want to use the fingers instead. And when you're done and happy, and maybe you want to define the outer or inner dimensions depending on do you want to optimize it for the electronics inside, or do you want to optimize the outer dimensions? So yeah, some decisions that you can make. When you're done, you can click on Download Box Plans, and again, you have at the bottom, I actually never fiddle around with these settings here, I never took a closer look at it. Basically, all I care about is download SVG. You can also use the DXF format, but since we'll be using Inkscape for the vector graphics, we are going to download the SVG and then work with that, which I have actually already done. So this is what it looks like when you open it up. Now, I don't know if you can see it because I'm going to ungroup the objects and I'm going to increase the stroke style just so that I hope you can see it a little bit better on screen. The stroke size actually doesn't really matter, as we will learn in a bit, but just so you can better see what we are working with here, this is what this file looks like. So this is a vector graphics file that has been generated by this website. And I open it up with a program called Inkscape. You can download it at inkscape.org, I believe, /download. So yeah, so what you see here is the individual parts of this box with the fingers and the cutouts. And there's also some labels to tell you what is what. So that's kind of useful, and this is a nice box. But now, first of all, I might want to have a label, I don't know, at the top. So I might want to add something like, this is my project. And maybe I want to use a nicer font. Something like this, maybe. And now I have customized my box a little bit. Also, if I'm handling electronics, I probably have some wires going in and out, unless I'm using a battery inside of it. So I probably will want, if this is, well, these labels aren't right. So if this is the back, maybe I have a hole and I can hold control actually to make it symmetrical. And I don't actually want a filling, but I do want an outline. And let's make this full opacity and also red, in fact. So let's copy this color over to this object to make it red. And the stroke thickness, the width, doesn't actually matter. But so here I could define, okay, I might want to have basically drill a hole into it that is, again, we are working in millimeters here because that's the units we selected when we generated the file. And here with the height and the width, I can define, okay, maybe I want an 8 by 8 millimeter diameter hole drilled into it to get some cables in and out of the box. So maybe I want to position it a little bit nicer, maybe I want it in the center, depending on what my electronics look like. But this is a really neat and easy way to do things. Now, I could save this and upload it or copy it over to the machine that talks to the laser cutter and almost be done with it, but really not quite. Actually, because one thing we need to look out for is that this is a text object and this is a circle object. This is not yet a so-called path. So here is the bit where you need to start learning about what vector graphics are and how it works. I cannot give you a complete introduction and tutorial on Inkscape and vector graphics in this talk, but just be aware that there are different types of objects, but what you want to be working with is basically paths. So right now this is a circle object, so we need to select object to path, and we need to do the same with this text, because right now it's a text object, so we need to create object to path. And now if we take a look at the nodes, we can actually tell this is not text anymore. I can actually edit the graphics of the text, but I cannot edit the text itself. Like, I cannot add or remove. I mean, I can always delete parts of it, but it's not like I can click with a text tool and then, you know, this just creates another layer of text on top of it. I cannot edit it anymore. So now I cannot edit my text anymore, but now it will be understandable for the laser cutter because it is in the correct correct format. So now I could save this simple box SVG and transfer it to the laser cutter, and it would actually work. Now, that was a little bit of demonstration here, but when we're dealing with laser cutters, we need to have a couple of things in mind when creating vector graphics files. So preparing vector graphic files, a couple of things you should keep in mind. Well, first of all, you need to plan your project, obviously, and select the materials. This step always goes. So what you see here on screen is an older project of mine. This is an 8x8x8 LED cube with 5mm simple LEDs. And of course, the whole setup of this cube is it's a bunch of wires connected with a bunch of LEDs. So if you really heavily bump into it, it will bend, it will break, it will not look nice anymore. So I need to protect it from people bumping into it, from the project, from falling down or whatever. So, but I still want to be able to see the cube. So what I need is an acrylic clear transparent box around it. So that is what I created here. And I basically used that makercase.com online tool to create this box, and then I modified it just a tiny little bit to match my needs, but that's all I needed. Because actually, if we go back into this file, you can see that this height, like if I zoom in here, the distance between here and there, as you can see, is well, 2.9 millimeters. So it's basically, that's because I didn't position this correctly, but this is basically 3 millimeters wide. So you need to have in mind, I hope you can see, it's a very tiny number here. So you need to have in mind that depending on what material you use, these box settings will actually change. So you cannot do 2 millimeters or 4 millimeters with this kind of layout because it won't match, it won't fit. Right? The fingers of this part won't fit perfectly into these openings. And if it's thicker, it won't fit at all. So you need to keep that in mind. So before you even start designing your files, you need to know what kind of material are you working with. In this case, I actually used 2 millimeter clear acrylic for the LED cube, and then this black acrylic is back to 3 millimeter LED. So the black and shiny acrylic is meant to hide the electronic box. And just for reference, this was the test setup to test the electronics, but this is what it looks like when it's powered on. Also, what you can see here to the right is an example of these are wooden drink holders that you can simply screw onto the wall. This has also been created with the makercase.com tool, and then I basically edited and customized the files a little bit in Inkscape because it's a pretty simple job, so it wasn't too much a hassle. But yeah, the more complicated your jobs will be, the more likely it might be that, you know, it might be more useful to actually use a 3D CAD design program instead of vector graphics. But this was still simple enough to be able to do. And another thing I want to point out with the black bottom part here, with the LED cube, which is positioned upside down here, obviously, but this is the bottom of the cube. And what you can see is 1 millimeter thick wires sticking out. And this pattern of holes, I basically drilled, quote unquote, these holes into the acrylic by laser cutting them into it. So all I did was create a square and then a bunch of circles inside, and obviously made sure that they had the correct size and the correct positions and stuff like that. And that's how I created this plate here. And the nice thing about it is you can work, this is very high precision. So the holes are just slightly bigger. I don't know if the wires were 0.9 millimeters or if they're 1 millimeter, and then the holes were 1 millimeter or 1.1 millimeter. So it's I didn't really give it much tolerance here, but it fit just perfectly. It was really nice to work with. So this is the amount of precision that you can do when laser cutting. So you can do a lot more fancier things with 3D prints, but on the other hand, you're not going to get such a shiny result. And also, depending on your printer, you might not get the level of precision, because when you're 3D printing, the material gets heated up, and as it cools down, it will actually contract just a tiny little bit, which can actually create, you know, little differences, and a little bit of tolerance should always be considered, whereas with a laser cutter, you can get extremely precise results. All right, so you need to know about the machine. We already covered that. You need to be able to know what type of materials can your laser cutter handle. Not all laser cutters can do the same materials. Metals, for instance, can be done by very big, expensive, and professional machines, but not necessarily by the type of laser cutter that you will find in your local hack space. You need to check that the maximum thickness of different materials is, you know, within the range of what the laser cutter can do. And then, of course, the maximum size. So, you know, if you want to fit a 40 by 40 centimeter square acrylic plate into a laser cutter that can only do 30 centimeters, then that's not going to work. So, you know, read up about the basic settings of the machine, or the, you know, what can be done and what cannot be done with the specific machine that you're working with. Of course, you also need to understand the material itself that you're working with. So one thing to consider is that if you're working with acrylics and you want to engrave the surface, it will turn milky white, so it will turn lighter, right? So if you have transparent acrylics, it will turn milky white. If you have black acrylics, it will turn sort of very light gray type of color. Of course, if you have red acrylics, it will turn light red, that sort of thing. So it will turn lighter. It's the opposite for wood. If you burn the surface, it obviously looks a little bit burnt, so it gets a little bit darker, and depending on your specific settings, you can actually create different types of burn marks. So when I worked with these the labels that says drinks on the front here, I actually had to tweak the settings a little bit because I wanted it to look way more, like have more contrast. So I wanted the letters to be as dark as they are now, because the initial settings actually were very sort of light. Yeah, just like you could barely read it, basically. So sometimes you need to tweak the settings a little bit. And when we're working with the plastic mirrors that I showed you before, there's a couple of things that you need to consider. First of all, this time you're not working on the top layer, but you're working on the back layer of the acrylic, because the mirror, the coating, is the reflective coating is actually on the back side of the acrylic. So you need to turn it upside down. If you're working from the back, this also means you need to mirror your design, because if you don't mirror the design, especially if you have a non-symmetrical logo, or if you have letters on, you know, writing on it, text, this will be this will be flipped around, this will be mirrored. So you need to mirror it in order for you to, when you swap it back around the right way around, that it will actually read correctly, right? So you need to mirror the design. And on top of that, you also need to negate your design. So instead of, because what you do with engraving is you're kind of emphasizing the area that you're engraving. And this is true for acrylics and also wood, even though one turns lighter and the other one turns darker. But when you're working with reflective coatings, what you're doing is you're taking away, you are removing the mirror properties in specific areas, but the areas that will look emphasized are the mirrored parts. Right? So what you want to do is you want to remove the inverse. So if we go back to this image here, actually this is the this is a bad example, because I think here I actually forgot to do it the other way around. So as you can see, the area in this case, actually it doesn't really matter because it's kind of a flame, but really it should have been the other way around. So you really want to be able to engrave this area and leave the other bits out. So depending on your design, you might want to do that or not. So just consider you need to mirror the design in order for letters to be showing up the right way around. And you also want to negate your design if you want the emphasized areas to actually be the shiny reflective ones. Okay, and now you also need to kind of understand how you are in the end actually going to load the file in order to be able to prepare the file accordingly. So once you load this vector graphics file into the laser cutter control software, like for instance VisiCut, this file can be interpreted in different ways. So one way is to simply treat all objects equally. So, for instance, if we go back to this example here, what we have is that we have a bunch of things that we probably don't want to be processed, and that is all of these basically comments. Like, I don't want the bottom of my box to read bottom, and I don't want top right next to the letters of my project, right? I don't really want that. So I don't really want to, but I might want to keep these just for reference so I know that what's what. But I might not actually want to engrave or laser cut these things. So if you treat every single object, if you simply process every single object, these will also be processed. I actually do this quite often, that I, especially for more complicated projects, that I might put comments into it, why I did something a specific way, or what I need to adjust in order to adjust for something else, or something like that. So all of these are just notes to myself that I don't really want to be laser cut or engraved into my project. So simply loading the file and treating everything that you've got in there might not be the best option. If you have a very simple file, of course you can do that. But I actually prefer sorting the file by color. So, and this I feel like is the most intuitive way. So what I usually do is I actually don't use black. What I tend to do is I use something like, can we go to RGB maybe? Makes more sense. Let's pick this one. Okay, so let's go blue. So what I usually do is I take red and blue. Like I usually tend to use, just because I'm used to these generated files, so I usually use red for the lines that are to be laser cut, and I use blue or green or some other color for the areas that are meant to be engraved. Now, I'll know that this is red, so this will be laser, this will be cut, right? And this blue area is meant to be engraved and not cut out. So, and what I usually do as well is I create a tiny little, that's not what I wanted. I want a square box, and I'm actually going to change the colors of it. So let's use, yellow. This interface has changed. I'm not really, let's use green. Let's zoom in as well. So we have green on the outside and the filling, let's make it, pink. So now we have different colors that are different from the red and the blue over here. And what I usually do is I set this to 10 by 10 millimeters. And I usually position it at the very top left corner. So now I not only have a little bit of a reference in terms of size, but also I have a little bit of a test object. So what I usually do when I load my file into the laser cutting software is I tend to process this one first because I actually want to test the material. So I tend to find a corner or make space at the top left corner because this is actually a really good reference point because this will also be the reference point of your actual laser cutter, like the home position of the laser itself. Once you, like that's something you need to adjust, but somebody will show you how to do that on the laser cutter, but this is basically your point of reference. So if you want to start over where you left off last time, this is actually really good to have this corner here defined on your material because there might be an offset, like the material itself might be a little bit bigger and you might decide if the edges aren't clean or something like that, or a little bit dirty or something, scratched, you might want to decide to move everything in a little bit. So this might not correspond to the actual outer edge of your material, but this corresponds to the reference point of your laser beam. So what I usually do is I would open up this file in VisiCut and then select cut everything that's green and engrave everything that's pink and ignore everything else. So I'm basically ignoring the rest of the project. And what I really want to find out is for that specific material that I'm using, are the laser cutting settings correct and does everything work the way I want it? So this is both a reference point and a bit of a material test. Now, if you're repeating the same project with the same kind of material over and over again, of course you don't need to do this every time. So if I actually already, if there's multiple boxes like we had before, like the, here I have a whole stack of four drink holder boxes that are all pretty much identical. I don't need to have this point of reference every single time. So next time I actually want to process the job, I will open up this file and simply tell VisiCut, please cut everything that is red and please engrave everything that is blue and ignore the rest, which means both ignoring this reference point at the top, but also ignoring these comments or labels that we have in the file that we don't actually want processed. So that's why I recommend using color, because it's the most intuitive to deal with. And then you also need to understand how the laser cutter, or how actually the software of the laser cutter, interprets the file, the objects in your file. So these are the really important things to look out for. So basically, what I said before, I already spoiled it a little bit. This as a text object will not be, depending on the software, might be processable, but might not be, especially if you're using custom fonts. This will change if you open up on a different computer where the font isn't installed, so you really don't want to be using fonts. You want to always convert fonts into vector paths. But another thing to look out for is that, like I said before, the thickness of a line doesn't matter. So if I look at the definition of this, I can see that there are four nodes, four path nodes defined for this path. And they obviously have a magnitude, because otherwise it wouldn't be a vector, it would only be coordinates. This is what it actually looks like. And then there is one setting that basically tells you the stroke width. And I can change this. But the path itself is this. It's a single line that goes around in a circle. So what the laser cutter does is the laser itself does not have variable width. It has one specific width, which is extremely tiny. So in other words, if you want to engrave this, for instance, instead of cutting it, you would like, okay, let's create something else here. Let's say we want to have this again. Let's get rid of the filling and let's pick a different color here and let's make it a lot thicker. So let's say you want to create a logo that looks something like this, and maybe you're putting, I don't know, a letter inside of it or something to make it look nice, something like this. And maybe this is something you want to engrave. Now, here's the thing though. This is not how it will be interpreted, because what this really is it's a definition of a circle. So the first thing we need to do is we need to create object to path. So now we have, just like this one, we have a circle defined by four points that has a stroke thickness. If I was to engrave this, you would not get an area like you would see on screen. This is not what is going to be processed. What is going to be processed is the actual path itself, which actually looks like this. So what the laser is going to do, it's going to engrave a single tiny little line that is going to look like you scratched the surface of of your material, because it's really, really thin, and that is the line. The thickness of the line, the definition of the thickness doesn't matter. So you can even set this to zero. It would still be processed as a single line. It doesn't matter what this looks like. So there's what you see on screen is not the result that you get. You always need to understand how this particular object has been defined and what it actually is. So even if it looks like a filling, like we had before, right? So here it looks like this is an area that is filled out. In fact, it is not. If you want this to be an area, you have to create it a different way. So lines really aren't for engraving, but what they are good for is for cutting the outline. So for instance, basically like here, the green area out here, this would be the outline of the square, and this would perfectly work. Actually, I think I forgot to convert this. So this I also need to convert to a path. So now it is defined by four spots, or nodes actually. See, it's really easy to make mistakes and forget about things, and then stuff doesn't work the way you want it to. So always double check that all of your objects are paths and not any other type of object, like a square, a circle, a star, a spiral. There's a lot of fancy stuff you can do, but you always need to make sure you always do either stroke to path or object to path. In the end, everything needs to be a path as an object. Another thing to look, so yeah, let's stick to lines first. So lines are really there for being processed by cutting. So like I said here, the stroke thickness is irrelevant. Each line will be as thick as the diameter of the laser beam, and that is pretty tiny. So lines can be cut. Lines can technically also be engraved, but you don't really want to do it. It's going to look like you scratched the surface and it will basically be invisible. So unless you just want to have some almost invisible markings for later reference, you can maybe do it, but it's just going to mess up the result. It's usually not what you want. But on the other hand, areas which are fillings can not be cut, but can be engraved. So areas are for engraving, but not cutting. So going back to this, this is not a filling. This is a filling. This is not a filling. This is a line thickness. So always make sure that just because it looks like it's an area, it doesn't technically have to be one. Because if you look at the settings here, this is the stroke color, and filling isn't even active. If I was to fill this in, this is the actual filling. This I could not laser cut. This I could engrave. But it would not be cuttable, but the outer blue area, that is not, you cannot engrave that. I mean, you can, but it's going to be one thin line. Okay, so that is something to keep in mind. Like I said before, what you see on screen is not what you get. Another typical mistake to make is to layer objects. So for instance, to have this kind of result, like you want, let's say you want this area, you want to create this circle with as an area, right? So what you could do instead is create another circle with a filling and not a stroke paint. So now we have a pink circle. Let's actually make it look the same. We're going to pick this color. And now we are going to create a second circle that is smaller. And we're going to turn it white. And I'm going to move it into the center. And there's some neat little tricks with arranging things where you can actually center objects to one another. And now I could even group the object. So now when I pick it and drag it around, it looks like it's one object, just like this one is one object, right? I could, like, if you're looking for the group ungroup options, you can find those here. Group and ungroup, I always use the shortcuts, because if you work a lot with VisiCut, it's a lot faster to simply use the shortcuts. So ungrouping, you will see that there are two outlines. These are two separate objects, and this is simply placed on top of the other one. What this means is that even though, let's just make this one a tiny bit smaller, and center it. So now it looks almost the same, but you can already tell, you can see through this one, right? Because you can see the red line behind it, whereas here you cannot see the red line behind it because this is not a cutout. If you have a clear background, you will not be able to tell the difference, right? This looks exactly the same, but it isn't. So neither one is actually going to do what you want it to do, because in this case, what the laser cutter will do, it will interpret the blue area, engrave the full area, which continues behind this white circle, and then it will process the white area. And if you tell it to do nothing, nothing will happen. So what you will actually get as a result is this, because the white area is ignored, or you could tell it to also process the white area, in which case it would engrave on top of the already engraved material, so you get a double engraving in the center. In each case, you will be able to tell the difference, but it will not be unengraved, because you processed it, and you processed it twice. So again, this is not what you were going for. So if you actually wanted this outer ring to be processed, you would have to subtract one object from the other one, and now you can tell that this is one object and it actually ends here, and this is the filling. So only this object here will actually give you the result that you were going for. And then, of course, you can choose to put another letter in there, and then choose, I don't know, probably if you want to engrave it, you would have to also convert it to a path, and then also change the filling to this blue. So yeah, that's already good. Let's get rid of this one, because we don't really want that. So this would be your very simple logo. These two things, this would work. Like you could put this maybe at the, you know, let's get rid of this. Maybe I have a label. This is my project, and this is my logo. So there you go. Pretty Little Box, or maybe. So yeah, so this is just an example of things to look out for. So basically what you see on screen is not what you get. This is not graphics design. If you were to export these two blue circles as a graphics file, as a PNG or JPEG, both would look exactly the same on screen. You would not be able to tell the difference in terms of graphics design, but the laser cutter will actually read the technical information that is stored inside of the vector graphics files, so it doesn't really care about what it looks like on screen. It will actually process the individual objects. So layering objects is a really bad idea. Don't do it. You get, or invisible objects will also be processed if you have, if you turn the transparency down, or if you have really thin lines that are basically invisible, you might get really funny things happening in your layout that you won't be able to see on screen, but you will see it later on the laser cut file. When I started out laser cutting, it took me quite a while to figure all this stuff out because nobody told me so. And figuring it out, like, you need to start with a super clean file, and if you are like editing a file that already exists, you really need to take your time to clean up a logo or anything that you are processing. You really need to clean that file up because graphics designers do a lot of little things that are not really meant to be used for laser cutting. So you really need to watch out for that. Another mistake that I made before is to have too much detail in the definition of the file. So of course, these aren't very complicated objects. So let's just zoom in here and do something, I don't know, super complicated here. And there we go. And if we look at the definition of it, if we take a look at the nodes, let's actually change this a little bit to a lighter setting so we can see better. So if we look at the nodes, it's fine. It's not too many, like, this is a little bit crowded, right? So that's a lot of spots right next to each other. So this, I guess, would be fine, but if you zoom out, it's quite a bit of detail. And you can actually, if your file looks like this, right, then it's way too much detail. There is a function to simplify a path, and you can see now from this, I went a step back, now I'm going forward, it simplified it enormously, right? So all of this extra information is actually, if you look at it, it's not going to make, like, it doesn't, I'm going back and forth now, you can barely tell any difference at all. So let's just take a circle again, just for another example. So this one is defined by four spots, and that is actually enough. I can, of course, just simply add more information, but this is not going to change anything about what it looks like. But what it will do, again, if I had this kind of situation, I would go to path and then simplify, and you can see it hasn't simplified the same way like it was before. It's a few notes more than it was before, but that's fine. I can maybe simplify even further and further, and you can actually repeat this step quite a number of times. And most of the time, yeah, it's not really doing much anymore at this point. So you can play around with the setting at the very end, because if you have something very crowded with a lot of nodes, basically what the laser cutter does is it tries to process each individual node, right? And then especially in this kind of corner, you will have a lot of heat introduction in these kinds of, especially this one here and this area here. Basically, it would completely burn or melt the material. Believe me, it happened to me before because I had way too much graphical information inside the file that wasn't even necessary for the result that I was going for. So if you have something more complicated, always check and see if you cannot simplify the path just a tiny little bit. If you notice that you are losing information, you can always step back and undo the last simplification process. Sometimes there's too much simplification happening, but if that's the case, simply undo the last step and then you're good, and that should be fine, because otherwise you might actually be burning holes into your into the details. And actually, to start out with, we already had the setting before when we created this little box file. So it was already set to millimeter units because that's what we selected here on the website. We set it to millimeters. But if you're creating a new file, then you should always check the page settings. That's the wrong software. Here it is, document properties. Always check this one here, and you should have a format for the page and also the display unit. So make sure that both of them are set to millimeters and not pixels, because that's usually what graphics designers will work with. But make sure you always switch it to millimeters to have an accurate representation of the size that you're working with. You can always resize the file later on inside of the laser cutter software, but I don't really like doing that, especially if you're trying to work on something with a lot of precision, like we had with, where was it? The LED cube and these tiny little holes. I don't really want there to be any offset because it will not be compatible with what I've been doing here. So I want this to be absolutely precise. So what I do instead is I make sure the file is absolutely correct. And when I load it into the laser cutting software like VisiCut or something, I make sure that there will be no rescaling happening and it will be processed exactly the way that I created it. So if you have clean files, you will get clean results. So yeah, make sure point 13, set the settings to millimeters, not pixels, just especially if you are working with something where you need precision. Like I already mentioned, if you put a tiny little square, it doesn't have to be 10 by 10 millimeters, it could also be 5 by 5 millimeters, but this is super useful to have as a reference point, and especially if something goes wrong, that you can always reset your reference point and have a clear definition of a reference. This is especially useful if you are working with round objects. So if you were to not have this box, which obviously is very square or quadratic, but instead you were working with this thing over here, and let's get rid of all of the rest, you would actually have this corner left over. Now maybe, you know, this is probably going to be bigger. This, like, where do you set your reference point for the laser cutter, the zero coordinate of the system? Like, this is really difficult to do if you have a round rounded edge at the edge and not a clear corner like here. If you have that, of course it's not necessary, but like I said before, it's always a good idea to check the presets that you're using at the laser cutter, where you need to select the type of material that you're using and also the thickness of the material. So are you using wood? Which type of wood are you using? And what's the thickness of the material? And then just process this tiny little square and make sure that with that particular preset that you've loaded from the software, that it will actually be able to cut through the material and not only just halfway or something like that. And this way you only messed up just a tiny little corner of your piece and not the whole thing, because if you immediately jump into processing your maybe much bigger elaborate file, you may have already messed up your material, and if it's a bigger project, this can be very expensive and very annoying. So yeah, those are my tips. This is only the kind of basic information that we are going to look at in a little more detail in the more interactive workshop that will follow this talk. This workshop session will not be recorded, so if you are watching this talk in the future as a recording, I'm sorry you missed it. You can download Inkscape at inkscape.org/download to try and figure out all the things that I've shown you here today. If some of it wasn't very clear enough, then we can talk about it in the live workshop. Same goes for the Q&A session, will also be happening in the workshop. If you're watching the recording in the future, you can always also get in touch with me by mm-hmm. email. Send me an email at merline@posteo.de. All right, so please, if you want to join the workshop, download Inkscape, install it before you join the session, and the link will be provided to you, and see you in a bit. Thanks. Bye.
So you're all experts in laser cutting now. This talk was a recording from yesterday, so we will have a question and answer following in the big blue button. You can find the link in the pre-talks. And the next talk after that one will be Kein Perso ohne Fingerabdrücke, which will be held in German. No. Moment. Yeah, there will be a Q&A following in the big blue button. You will. Okay. So the first question is, why not move the focal point to the mid of material thickness, but to the top?
Yes, thank you, Buchsprit. Just to clear up the confusion a little bit, we streamed this talk yesterday and there was a workshop following this talk. So that's what I said in the recording. But now we are having a Q&A here. If there's any more questions, we can have an extended Q&A following the stream in the big blue button link that you will find in the pre-talks description. Sorry about that confusion. So to get back to the question, if we could maybe show my slides, I will scroll back to, it was a question concerning slide number 5, I believe.
Yes.
And so the question is, why is the focal point on the top of the material? Actually, I wasn't entirely sure about this because most documents, manuals and such that you will find will not actually give you this kind of information. Yesterday in the workshop, I learned that the focal point is actually within the material, like 1/3 down or something like that, which totally makes sense. What I was explaining here on this slide was that if the focal point is too far off, that the light actually spreads out, and that's why it you will not receive enough energy in the material. So the exact position of the focal point doesn't have to be on the surface. It is in fact within the material, but if it isn't specifically adjusted to that material, it could be so far off that the process, the actual engraving or cutting, will not work anymore. So I hope that cleared up the confusion about this question.
Yeah, the next question is from a person who has no hex space in her or his region. Can you recommend an online service for laser cutting?
No, I cannot, because I don't actually have any experience myself with online services, because I always use the laser cutter that was locally available to me. And it's also a lot of fun, you know, figuring out how to use the machine, which of course I haven't at all covered in this talk. But yeah, so basically if you have clean files and you know what kind of materials you are working with, all of the, you know, getting the adjustment right is the job and the task of the service that will be provided to you. So at least that part is going to be easier and should be no problem for you. So it's actually easier to do that, but of course it's a little bit less fun. But I suppose the major difference is quality and prices there. So yeah.
There's one question from IRC. Can you recommend a certain projects for beginners to gain or get familiar with all of the topics, so not to start overcomplicated?
Yeah, totally. So I had a lot of fun creating keychains, which I think you could see during the talk because there were a lot of keychains that I showed. Like I said in the talk, I recommend starting with acrylics instead of wood because it tends to be easier to work with because there is less variation with the material, and then start with something small like personalized keychains or maybe something you could wear around your neck, like a necklace, something like that, something small, something easy. Maybe find a logo or let's say a shark, for instance, right? find an SVG online or that you can modify and edit and personalize and put your name on it, or just draw it yourself by hand, and then just simply put a red ring around it, which is your laser cutting outline. And remember that you need a hole for the actual keyring to go into, and then just, you know, figure out the size by looking at your keychain and figuring out like, okay, so, you know, this is the size. The reason why I'm recommending this is because it's a lot of fun. It's something personalized. It's something you can always carry around with you. And also it's small enough to not require a lot of expensive material. So I would actually recommend starting small with a small project. And yeah, something easy and something 2D. So like a keychain, like I said, so a 3D box that you would like to create, of course, requires, unless you're using the makercase.com website or something like that, it requires a little bit more thinking and things to not go wrong. And then if something does go wrong, you've wasted a lot of expensive material. And often enough, if you have a local hack space, they usually have bits and pieces of acrylics or wood lying around where, you know, a 2 or 3 centimeter diameter keychain or some small object would easily fit on. So usually, you might not even have to pay for the material or just donate something in the, you know, donation box of the hack space if you're not a local or heavily involved in that hack space or something like that. But so something small, something easy, that doesn't, that you could basically put on just leftover material that you would find at your hack space. Because if something goes wrong, simply grab another piece of material and try again.
And for the one who are fearing to go over complicated, how many projects you already wrecked in the beginning? How much did you curse for not getting the result you wanted?
Oh, so many. I mean, I mentioned a few in the talk, like for instance, having too much detail and cutting around too much detail. So if you're engraving, you can have a lot of fine details in your files, but if you have a lot of information in tight corners, your material will basically melt. Another common mistake is not setting the focal point correctly, which is why I talked about that a lot as well, because it happens so easily. If you have a routine working with the machines, you kind of forget that checklist in your head. Right. So you end up being like, oh, yeah, I already know what I'm doing. And then you're like, oh, the result is really off. What is happening here? And then I realized, I used 4 millimeter material before, and now I'm working with 3 millimeter material, and I forgot to adjust the distance, the height, the focal point. Yeah, these are the most common mistakes. I have wrecked so many things, and also mechanically redesigned stuff. So usually it's an iteration process. But all of the information here in the talk is learning by doing. So this is what I learned by making a lot of mistakes.
So thank you there.